National Radio Hub.
Heidi Exers, welcome to Market Scope for November 2007. Recently, Fred Bobe vacationed way up north in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And, of course, Fred took his recording equipment and radio along.
Thanks, Phil. In late July, early August, my family and I took a short vacation in Upper Michigan, and I did take along some radios, and I thought I'd profile some air checks here from what I heard in Upper Michigan. However, there's not too much to present, only because of the fact that the soil conditions at the cabins where we were at was very poor, and we couldn't hear too many AM radio stations during the daytime. Mostly at nighttime, we had some Skywave stations skip in. But during the daytime, even the local WNBY 1450 in Newberry was kind of iffy, only lighting up about 7 of the 10 LEDs on the Sony 2010. The FM reception was a slight bit better, but we were down in a hole, so it was not too good. But this air checks, or I should say these three air checks, give you a good representation of what Upper Michigan radio is about. And the one thing that you notice right off the bat is that it's very public service oriented, and it's live, unlike a lot of stations around here in Lima. So let's give a listen to about three stations, WNBY AM, WNBY FM, and another station that I happen to record that just kind of gives you an idea of what Upper Michigan radio is all about.
Depend on 1450 WNBY for news, sports, weather, music, and fun with Mike Stanley. Weekday mornings, 6 to 9:30 on 1450 WNBY.
Sometimes you feel lost in
Country Classics, 1450 WNBY. And that's Johnny and June. If I were a carpenter. Again, I'm John Thomas. Let's take a look at our news and historical data for this date. Thursday, August 2nd. Got another month underway, another special month to observe. It's National Catfish Month, sponsored by Mississippi Catfish Ranchers. It's catfish ranching. That's what they call it. It's a lot easier than cattle ranching, though, but it smells a lot more. You know, everybody's special, as evidenced by the special days observed each year. Like today, for example. Today is National Non-Parenthood Day. A day set aside to honor couples who have no children, those people who have not contributed to overpopulation, people who haven't the slightest idea what to do when a child's purse begins leaking orange Kool-Aid during communion. That's a good skill to have, right?
Today's the day to go back. It's JCPenney's back-to-school huge sale.
Another year.
Newberry Sports Leader, 1450 WNBY.
We make Nobin Way sound great. Hi, I'm John Thomas, playing all the great country classics on 1450 WNBY.
I wouldn't listen.
To all the men and women serving in our armed forces today and in the past, thank you for the sacrifices you have given to make this country of ours the greatest in the world. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you. 1450 WNBY.
Here's WNBY's FM station.
Oldies 93 and Travis Freeman wrapping up another 30-minute Oldies Music Marathon, taking care of a request for T-Rex. And we're just after 3 o'clock. Good afternoon, it's the At Work Network on a very hot, boy, it is cooking outside, Monday afternoon. I hope you're sitting in air conditioning. And if not, maybe go to Lake Superior or Lake Michigan and go jump in the lake because it is a scorcher today. Full weather details on the way from meteorologist Carl Bonack and our Oldies 93 exclusive radar forecast. And the weather's brought to you by Divine Car Care on Ashman Street in Sioux, Michigan, reminding you that regular maintenance costs less than unexpected repairs. See Divine Car Care today for auto auto repair at its finest. In this quick reminder, just into the Oldies 93 studio line, that the Tequamanon Area Schools Fall Sports Parents Meeting is tonight. If your kids are playing in any fall sports at Tequamanon Area Schools, you need to be at this meeting tonight, 6 o'clock in the Bystrom Auditorium. We just got word, and so we're passing it on to you. A quick reminder from your station for good times and great oldies, Oldies 93.
Oil, filter, fluid, next!
Pharmacy, your health is our business.
Oldies 93 weather.
Heat, so far not all that much humidity. It looks like as we work through the middle portion of the week, I'm meteorologist Carl Bonac for Oldies 93.
Alrighty, thank you, Carl. Now let's get right back to more of the greatest hits of the 60s and 70s with Jan and Dean.
Oldies 93.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
It's the Association on Oldies 93, playing all oldies all the time. Music just right for your workday. I'm Travis Freeman, and the Curtis Tri-Lakes Triathlon will be coming up Saturday, August 11th at the Curtis Park. It's hosted by the Curtis Community Arts Council, Helen Newberry Joint Hospital and Healthcare Center, and the Curtis Area Chamber of Commerce. For the complete registration form or for more information, you can visit the Helen Newberry Joint Hospital website. That's hnjh.org. A quick reminder from your station for good times and great oldies, oldies 93, with a request for a Three Dog Night next.
Odawa Casino Resort.
1-800-483-9611.
Alrighty, let's get right to it. It's another 30-minute Oldies Music Marathon as we help you through the workday. I'm Travis Freeman. Let's kick it off right now with Aretha Franklin from Oldies 93.
Another station that we heard was coming across Lake Michigan from the community of Petoskey, Michigan. This is WLXT at
96.3. Light 96 FM. If I could turn.
Light 96 FM, and if I could turn back time. There's Cher before that, Hootie and the Blowfish. Coming up for you in the next little bit, another extra long set of light rock favorites and that Doppler weather radar forecast. Oh man, after this afternoon, things are going to get real nice. This is Light 96 FM.
Northern Michigan, home of lake breezes, exceptional dining, million-dollar sunsets, luxurious lodging, and shopping.
An equal housing lender. Offer based on approved credit. New applications only. Certain restrictions apply. Call for details.
Light 96 FM, Doppler weather radar forecast says clear skies tonight, down to 55 tomorrow, sunny, and 85 at the Commodores right now. It's three times a lady at Light 96 FM.
Light 96 FM. Light rock, less talk.
Light 96 FM.
Light 96 FM. It is Minute Workers Down Under. The Tuscola County Sheriff's Office is investigating an Amber Alert that's going on right now. They're looking for a vehicle. Please watch for a red Buick with license plate number BKN0337. If you have any more information, call 911 or the Tuscola County Sheriff's Office, 989-673-8161. This is Light 96 FM.
Looking for a decidedly different twist on cerveza?
On select models with approved credit. See dealer for details.
We invite you to join the Light 96 family today.
Light96.com.
Birthday rewards, special prizes, and contests that are for members only. Join the family. Light96.com. Light 96 FM. Light rock, less talk.
It's a station that I can leave on all day and I don't get tired of it.
Light 96 FM.
Well, there you go, Phil. There's a short market scope of what radio is like up around Curtis Lake in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Thanks, Fred, for a quick peek at radio in the wilds of the Wolverine State. Remember, if you'd like to submit air checks of your market or an interesting station in your area, send them to me, Phil Wayne, at 313 Spring Street, Upper Sandusky, Ohio, 43351 1652. I, along with the rest of our DX Audio Service community, would be most grateful. Now, here are the musings from the members.
This is Musings of the Members.
The opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, or its editors.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. Well, CHWO is going to move their studios right into Toronto proper from where they've been in Oakville, which I think they should. If you're going to call yourself a Toronto station, you might as well be right in there. Randy Owen left CKPC here in Brantford after 7 years. I went to the new station in Tilsonburg. He did some program directing in Kitchener before that. He's quite a veteran of the radio business. He's had a lot of experience. I'm happy to report that KMOX in St. Louis got the Blues games back. You can get them at night, so I'm quite happy about that. Well, I tell you, we had a wonderful time in Boise, Idaho, and I want to give my heartfelt thanks to everyone there. Well, there's certainly a lot of moving and shaking going on over around Erie, Pennsylvania, I noticed. 1330, the fan, left ESPN the 8th of January and put in an oldies format. It's now gone back to All Sports with the Fox Sports Network. Now, that gives Erie two sports stations because WRIE on 1260 took up with ESPN the first Monday in February. The oldies format I talked about has gone up the dial to 1530, and their callers are now WINE. For our friend in Massachusetts that picked up the station on 900 that had the old radio programs, that was our neighbors down the road here, CHML in Hamilton, a 50,000-watt station, very successful, celebrating their 80th anniversary on the air this year. Also, CKOC down there has been on 85 years on 1150. CFCO Chatham, 630, it's their 80th year on the air. And we should mention 50 years for WACK over in Newark, New York, not very far out of Rochester. I wanted to mention while we were in Boise, the best catch made, our friend Mike Lance, believe it or not, picked up 920 CKNX all the way from Wingham, Ontario, a 10,000-watt station, about 87 miles from where I live here. I get it, but I didn't think anybody would ever get it in Boise, Idaho. I got some stations, Canadian ones too, Red Deer, Alberta on 830, and I got a sports station in Edmonton on 1260, and I got a couple of Calgary stations, the sports one on 960, and I think the one on 1060. And I picked up several stations from San Francisco and Sacramento and L.A. at night. I'd like to know about 1380 in Sacramento. I got it one night, and they had a minor league baseball game on. Sacramento was playing, but I never got the call letters, so maybe someone listening to this tape would be able to help me with that. CHWO 740 has just been sold. A fellow by the name of Moses Snymers, who has been very successful in radio and TV, he has bought that station, and he's going to keep it the way it is as far as the format's concerned with the 50 and over crowd that it's so popular with playing.
Hi, this is John German from Elmira Heights. Hello, DXers. The correction on John Balker's mention on 1000 and WLNL was a brand new station on the air in 1986. They took over the original spot of WIQT when they moved to 820. Thank you. 73 is good DX.
Hello, Ken Onischuk here in Lockport, Illinois on Thursday, October the 4th. An item from the Chicago Tribune. Educational Tape Recording for the Blind, an organization founded here some 40 years ago by the late Vivette Rifkin, is to close shop at year's end, a victim of technological change. The nonprofit group didn't have the resources to convert to digital recording. It found itself being obsolete as textbooks became readily available on CDs, downloadable to MP3 players, and accessible via software that converts text to speech. Any other questions, give me a call, 815-838-2179. Thanks.
This is Don Finney in Miami, Florida, and I have a question. What were the glory days of radio? What years, as far as you're concerned, was radio the greatest of all? And when did it start going down, and when did it reach the point that it is today? Thank you very, very much.
Hi, Bill Alasauskas in Milford, Pennsylvania. The big news over this way in northeast Pennsylvania is Nanticoke, 730 on the AM, and WCDL, 1440 on the AM in Carbondale, Pennsylvania, have switched over to Spanish, basically a contemporary Spanish-type format right now, but they should be adding local people in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Thank you much. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Greetings, audio service subscribers. This is Paul Burkhart from Watertown, Massachusetts, on October the 2nd. I want to let you know that I've received the September issue of Popular Communications, And on part three of the Braille edition, there is a very excellent article on the history of the National Radio Club. And it also has a lot of interesting loggings of various stations from the Pacific and from Europe. And I must say, a very excellent article about the National Radio Club. And I hope that there will be lots more interest for the club from people who read popular communications. And it will be in a couple of months that yours truly and Lucille will be relocating to Arkansas. It will be interesting to see if there are any DXers who live in the state of Arkansas. In the PopCom that I alluded to for September, it mentioned Dale Park and Richard Wood from Hawaii, who gave us a lot of DX catches from the Hawaiian Islands. Now, I don't think we've ever heard from anybody from Hawaii on the DX audio service. Is it possible that perhaps we might be able to get in touch with those people from Hawaii to compare notes as to what stations they have been able to pick up from that far west, since the Hawaii is the 50th state? That is my question for this time. Happy holiday season to you all coming up in November. Thank you very much.
Hello, Fred and DXers. This is the one and only Victor speaking to you from the Schmidt House in downtown Silver Spring, Maryland. Received my audio service tape today, October the 4th. Call letter changes, 820 WWWB in Frederick, 1500 WWWT, and on FM WWWT 107.7. These three stations will continue talk radio. They will no longer be known as Washington Post Radio. They will carry talk shows. Neil Bortz is on, so is Randy Rose. Their slogan is, we're to the left, to the right, and whatever. They also will carry Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, Navy football, and Georgetown University basketball. Paul Burkhart, the station you got at 1550, the Disney station, is in Hampton, Virginia.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. Remember, if you have something on your mind, something to say, give us a call today on the Action Line. The telephone number is area code 360-469-0189. That's for DX Audio Service members only. Keep it brief and to the point so everyone has a chance to speak. Now let's answer some questions. Well, Don, the high and low points of radio. I bet if you were to poll 100 National Radio Club members, you would get 100 different answers. I bet if you asked somebody like John Bowker, he would say the 30s and the 40s and the 50s were pretty exciting. To me, it was 1955 to 1975 because that's when I listened to the heyday of top 40 radio. As far as the low points go, this is my own personal opinion, but when radio was deregulated, I think that marked the end for creativity on a lot of AM radio stations. To Paul Burkhart, you asked about Dale Park and Richard Wood and the Aloha State. Well, I think, and I could be wrong, but I believe Dale Park is deceased, and I just learned of Richard Wood's passing in DX News Magazine issue number 4. This was in the form of a musing from Carl Forth, which I'd like to read. I was greatly saddened to hear of Richard Wood's passing this week. On a trip to the Big Island in February, my girlfriend and I visited with Richard several times, had dinner, went with him on a coffee-buying trip, visited with him at his coffee stand in downtown Hilo, and we even had a DX session. His main beverages were not set up at the time, so no Europe or South American DX, but it was still a lot of fun to DX with Richard. We rented a house for a week in Hawaiian Paradise Park, which is the same area Richard had lived. Before this, I had not seen him in many years. We had met at several conventions in the 1970s, and then Rob Kramer, Jeff Roberts, and I visited him while we were still students at Southern Illinois University, and he was teaching at Southeast Missouri. This was about 1979, and we had helped him put up a TV antenna. He was one who gave back to the hobby, reporting from many locations and providing interesting background on stations and the languages they used. I did some DXing on my own in Hawaii on the ATS-909, and it was fun to hear many of the West Coast stations as the closest signals 2,000 miles away. A little like the Chicago DXers experienced in the 1920s when they picked up those same stations when they were the only ones on the air. But those times are gone, and we're sorry to hear of Richard's passing. And that is our musings to the members. And now a DX Audio Service special, a look at digital AM radio. We have several articles we'd like to present for the remainder of this edition. The first one is Citadel Halts AM Nighttime IBOC Operation Amidst Complaints, authored by Leslie Stimson on Radio World magazine. There are a lot of unknowns at this point in the Citadel AM IBOC nighttime situation, but one thing is clear. Something is going on, and the company wants to work with Ubiquiti to get to the bottom of it. Citadel's Director of Corporate Engineering, Martin Stabbert, confirms that his company is taking a step back and stopped operating AM IBOC at night on 10 stations as of October the 1st. The stations still broadcast in digital during the day. Of its 66 AM stations, 16 have converted and 4 more are in the process. Citadel's conversion efforts continue. An excerpt from his memo to staff reads, "In response to the lackluster performance, the limited benefit, and the various reports of significant interference, Citadel is suspending nighttime AM HD operations at this time. Please reinstate your previous procedures for daytime-only HD operation as soon as possible." Unquote. The company has received interference complaints from listeners and stations on adjacent channels, the latter from both Citadel and non-Citadel-owned stations in and outside the markets. He tells me the calls from non-Citadel-owned stations were cordial. "Most of the complaints center around 50 kilowatt Class A AM stations," he said, "although internally Citadel has observed effects from lower powered stations on adjacents at night. With this action, Citadel, a member of the HD Digital Radio Alliance, becomes the first radio group to, in effect, become a public testbed for other radio groups. I feel other groups may have already done so privately." Additionally, Stabbert said other groups may want to take part in the Citadel test. All of this still in play. Stabbert stressed that Citadel's action is not a criticism of Ubiquiti, nor of its technology. The move, however, comes at a time when the impact of AM digital at night, which only recently was okayed by the Federal Communications Commission, is being closely scrutinized by those who believe it could fundamentally damage the band. Ubiquiti Digital said it has received few complaints about interference, that the vast majority of feedback it's received about nighttime AM has been positive. Quote, "We understand Citadel's caution, and we are working with them to understand what they are experiencing and to address their concerns," unquote, said a spokeswoman. The move came to light Monday in an internal memo that was leaked to the media. "I suspect this isn't the first such instance for any of the groups, the only difference being that others would have had a chance to work the issue out privately while Citadel had its privacy ripped away like a Band-Aid. While I'm sure it's not happy about that, it's beneficial to shine a light on the issue, which, as you know, is incendiary in some industry circles. I hope the resolution of this is just as public. Some IBOC opponents are particularly happy with this news. We received a note from one person noting the celebration and drinking toasts on the medium wave lists." With part two of Leslie Stimson's article, here's Mark Nuremberger.
Martin Stabbert, don't call him Marty, said his company was ready to go on at night on September 14th, the first date AM IBOC nighttime operation was allowed. In calls and a memo prior to that, he told his chief engineers, "If your plants are ready to run at night, please do, but let's monitor the results carefully. To the extent we end up with substantial interference that we can ourselves cure, we will." Stimson says, he told me, I also said, if we find issues or are not 100% satisfied with the performance, we will address that at the appropriate time. It took some time to get feedback. He said, I would imagine some people listening the first couple of nights wondered what was going on, but didn't call the station, especially since the nighttime launch was over a weekend. Some stations had no complaints, he said, and roughly the same numbers did. He said, listeners who have complained say they hear hiss, and adjacent channel stations say they hear noise on the channel. He added that most of the impacted adjacents are stations Citadel owns. Citadel inherited plants with equipment from various manufacturers in its Disney ABC acquisition. He also says the issues with AM at night do not point to a specific manufacturer's HDR transmission equipment, confirming that Citadel plants use various types of gear from companies including Harris, BE, and Nautel. Stabbert could not give an exact dollar figure for how much Citadel and ABC Disney combined have spent on converting their AMs, but he estimates it's in excess of $1 million.
And now here is Phil Wayne with part three.
After Stepping Back, What's Next? By Leslie Stimson, news editor and Washington bureau chief for Radio World. Citadel and Ubiquiti are figuring out the next steps, and who will pay for what. Stabbert said Citadel employees have been measuring the effects of AM nighttime iBox objectively, by ear so far. It's working with Ubiquiti to determine what equipment and resources are needed to figure out a resolution. That may involve some on-off testing and or reducing the injection of the digital energy into one or both sidebands. Stabbert said, quote, we have a general idea of what's going on. As we step back, we can do empirical testing with Ubiquiti, unquote. He couldn't guess how long the process would take, noting, quote, the sooner we step back and evaluate the next move, the sooner we can make that move. If there is a problem, we want to help Ubiquiti tweak it so that it's less of an issue or a non-issue, unquote. Of the issue overall, Stabbert said, quote, it's an unknown, and that's why we're stepping back to work with Ubiquiti to make it known. I can only see that good will come of our stance of stepping back to evaluate performance, unquote.
Thanks, Phil. I'd also like to include an article which was written by Barry McLarnon, who is a DXer and broadcast engineer residing in Canada. If the name sounds familiar, we talked with Barry at great length several years ago about digital radio on All Radio magazine. Here's what Barry had to write on October the 20th. Recently on one of the lists, there was some discussion about distances over which IBOC interference could cause problems, and it got me to wondering just how received skywave signal levels vary with distance from the transmitter. So I did some calculations using standard FCC field strength prediction techniques and dumped them into a spreadsheet. The results are shown in a graph at http://topazdesigns.com. That's topazdesigns.com/AMBC/50KW-fieldstrength.png. A few notes about this graph. Field strength is shown in dBu, i.e., decibels above 1 microvolt per meter. 60 dBu is 1 microvolt per meter, 40 dBu is 0.1 microvolt per meter, and so on. The field strength is the predicted 10% nighttime skywave value. For example, as the signal fades, it is expected to exceed this value 10% of the time. 2. The predictions are for a 50,000-watt non-directional station. For other powers, or for directional patterns, the curves would have had the same shape, but it would need to be shifted up or down appropriately. 3. The curves are for two different tower heights, 180 and 190 degrees. The 190 curve would be closer for the majority of 50 kilowatt non-D stations, which have tower heights in the 189 to 195 degree range. WSCR is one example that is close to the 180 degree curve, and WTAM falls in between at 185 degrees. Note that the tower height makes very little difference, except when the distance is less than 40 kilometers or 250 miles. The taller tower provides lower skywave signals close in and slightly more at greater distances, but the difference isn't huge. What is more interesting is that the highest signal levels occur at around 500 kilometers or 310 miles from the transmitter. The drop-off with distance beyond that point is not as high as you might think. If you assume that one S unit is 6 dB, then the signal will be down by one S unit at about 1,150 kilometers or 715 miles, two S units at around 1,400 kilometers or 870 miles, and three S units at 1,800 kilometers or 1,115 miles. So those blowtorches can create some pretty big signals over large distances, and their iBox sidebands can do the same. And that article was written by Barry McLarnon. And if you think you've heard this all before, let's replay an article by Mark Dernberger, which was recorded in 1999. Mark?
Mark Dernberger here, and we've spun the tape back to April 1999 and the NAB convention in Las Vegas, a gathering of 100,000 or so radio and television broadcasters, where we were able to seek out some of the people who know what's going on with digital audio broadcast, to ask the question, in behalf of all of our listeners, what will happen to nighttime AM reception once it's a digital world? What will happen to that long, lazy skywave fade? We got a lot of interesting opinions, beginning with longtime engineer and amateur radio operator Chuck Kelly.
Digital has been the answer to an awful lot of things, and sometimes it's the answer to things that aren't problems. But in this particular case, AM-DAB, digital audio broadcasting on AM, can solve a lot of these issues. AM-DAB offers the same kind of coverage you get, 500 miles, 1,000 miles, but it offers it with the kind of clarity that you've been used to on FM.
Now, you said night and day difference, so let's take the listeners who are interested in that magic station they can get at night.
Right.
It only shows up once a year. They're out in California, and they're listening to the east, and all of a sudden Pittsburgh comes rolling in. What's going to happen when everybody's digital?
There's going to be a capture effect, just like there is on FM.
So when you say capture effect for non-technical listeners, this is the either-or effect that FM gives you. You get one station or the other, but you don't get a mix.
And the reason is because when I've been a broadcast band DXer myself for years and years, and sometimes you're listening to the guy that's not the loudest, not even the second loudest, but the third loudest. You're listening for the words in between that you can hear and try to pull them out. That guy you're unlikely to be able to hear in AM-DAB.
So if you were a romantic, Chuck, and I've known you for a number of years, how would you feel about this horrible sound that we're so used to, and yet the fun of capturing that sound? How are you going to feel about that going away, that old fade in and out and the stations beating against each other so you could hear two or three guys and you try to pick out one over the other?
For that, there's still 40-meter CW.
Next, we caught up with highly regarded consultant Ed Schober. Ted Schober has been a longtime friend of the radio industry and a visionary when it comes to digital.
I believe firmly that there will be a digital AM service, a digital medium wave service. I believe what will happen is that we will have a situation where there will be a very marginal in-band on-channel operational system, which will last for about 2 years until there's a lot of radios out there. And what will happen is there will be a few money-losing at this point, but forward-looking.
Called pioneers.
Pioneers, right. Operators who will go full digital. The digital medium wave broadcasters will take over very quickly in the same way that CDs took over from vinyl. There'll be no reason to have an AM broadcasting service once you can have a very good digital broadcasting service. We have as an opportunity now is that the KFIs and WABCs of the world will now be wide area high quality services. The smaller stations, the Class B stations, will remain as local stations. There's no way that I see that there's enough Shannon limit in the AM band at night for stations of that class to be able to look at a Skywave service. But what they can look at is a well-defined service area that does not have holes and dropouts. And in particularly hilly markets, this is going to be a very strong player.
Now let's take the guy who's been listening for years and years and years to the Clear Channel AM stations at night. He's used to that romantic sound of the long, lazy AM skywave fade. What's going to happen out there? He's going to either have a signal or he's not.
That's right. It's going to be an on or off situation. There will be, I'm sure, strong puncture coating on AM at night.
Okay, explain that for our non-technical listeners.
Puncture coat is where you essentially take and remove data which you can hear. in order to improve the quality of the station while protecting part of the data to a very high level, part of the data you protect to a much lower level. That lower data will simply be excised when the propagation conditions are not good, and you'll end up with a real audio kind of radio station.
So this is probably not unlike right now FM, analog FM blends to mono, and the high end goes away.
And that's going to be based upon two components. One will be the amount of signal which is actually received in its multipath distortion, and the second will also be how much interference that it receives in that part of the service area. So if there's a first adjacent station that is operating near the reception point, you may find that you'll have a blend, even though moving, you know, 5 miles further away from that other first adjacent station may remove all of that that limitation.
Now, blend isn't so bad, but we're also dealing with something that's not unlike the FM capture effect, where you have an either-or situation. What happens there?
Well, there's a process in any receiver which is essentially blanketing interference, where the front end of the radio cannot receive the desired signal because there's an adjacent signal which blocks it. Blocking interference, there's nothing that I can think of that fixes the problem without being expensive.
Well, that's interesting. So far we've learned that there will certainly be radical new radio designs, that the sound of the nighttime signal could be an either or, and when you have a station, if the digital is going away, it could blend gracefully from stereo to mono, down to that so-called real audio effect. Noted consultant Bob Culver brings this into the real world for those of us imagining ourselves trying to dial through the digital world with our Sony Digital 2010s.
There won't be really good feedback for the listener with his ears as to whether or not the signal is going to be reliable until he starts to listen to it and starts to hear dropouts in audio. And there's no way to tune or adjust the receiver or adjust the tuning or anything to compensate for any interference, like at night in Skywave when you get narrow banding or a sideband disappears, the audio shifts and you can hear that and you can compensate for it. And with your ear and your hearing, your ear-brain interface, you can tolerate a bunch of noise and a bunch of interference. But with
it's
digital,
kind of the fun of the capture, you know?
Yeah, well, it is, because
pulling it out of the noise.
Yeah, right. Even in a crowd, if you're standing in a crowd, you can try to focus in on somebody and actually pick out a conversation in the crowd if you work at it. But in the crowd of the noise of the spectrum, in analog, you can pull it out. And if you're really dedicated, you can go ahead and listen to a noisy signal. But with digital, if it's interfered with enough that the digital quits, it's just not there. And you can't get around that. And you can't really pull the information out of a chopped up when the audio, therefore, like that, when the audio drops out every once in a while. You can't pull any information out of an audio stream like that, where you can if the audio is more or less continuous but occasionally distorted a little bit by noise. So it's going to be a whole new learning experience.
I've heard there would be some kind of a graceful, let's call it a blending mechanism to relate it to what we know about in FM today, before it actually drops out and goes away.
That's a great concept, and maybe it can be done, but that depends on there being some type of an analog backup for a digital bit stream. So if the digital signal drops out, the digital decoder says, oh, I can't pick this up anymore, I'm going to have to revert to analog, and can revert to an analog signal, then that can be used. Or if you have only the digital signal and you have the ability to still capture and decode a reduced audio quality signal from corrupted digital.
That, I think, is what he was saying.
Yeah.
He was thinking that your throughput might go down and you'd end up with a real audio type sound.
Right, the throughput goes down, the audio bandwidth goes down and everything, but eventually that too is going to fail.
One of the proponents of in-band on-channel AM digital radio, USADR, has such a parallel mechanism, an analog signal coexisting with the digital carrier. They also ask you to pay a price for their system, a narrowing of the audio bandwidth on the analog side, the sound we now hear, to 5 kilohertz. Here's USADR's Glenn Walden.
One of the things about our system is that if the digital service fails, the analog service is substituted. We blend to analog when the digital service fails. So at worst, our system will not be any worse than the existing analog performance, and exactly in time sync with the digital. So it makes a smooth, seamless transition to analog from digital. In the future, we would turn off the analog and turn all the energy in the band into digital. This system will perform very, very well.
I pressed Glenn on whether or not they were considering Skywave reception in their design.
The USADR's goal in developing an iBox system is to develop a system that's intended primarily for ground wave service area. We have not done much testing with the system on SkyWave, although we have gone out and listened to it back in 1995 on SkyWave. We have not focused on that. Our focus is on GroundWave. Again, we're not doing any SkyWave testing right now, or have done none, and have not exercised the system in our simulations for that. However, during the field testing, we'll make some effort to take a look at what happens in SkyWave performance. If every station were to adopt IBOC, the amount of adjacent channel interference would drop depending on where you are around the directional array or wherever you are. The amount of interference in the AM band would drop somewhere between 2 and 30 dB. It could make SkyWave listening a lot more enjoyable. What we do is we clear up all the first adjacent channel monkey chatter, because we ask all the digital stations will have to reduce their bandwidth to 5 kilohertz. They have a 5 kilohertz brick wall filter and noise blanking. So they're going to get improved analog reception with our receivers and digital.
Well, having heard all of that, there still seems to be the question of what happens when that RF signal itself fades, analog or digital. Tom McGinley, known to many of our listeners, helps explain.
Really, the mechanism that's going to, quote-unquote, help to save the day for the long fades on SkyWave AM reception when we go digital will be time diversity. And what USADR is proposing to do is to stretch out the total time delay from the time that the transmission audio is encoded and put into the transmitter to the time when the receiver decodes it and then puts it into the speakers for the listeners. There's going to be a considerable delay there. The amount of delay, I don't think they've fixed that yet. It's all a buffering mechanism that allows for basically two sources of signals to be picked from, to be stuffed into the buffer, so that during a fade, when the real-time signal is in trouble, that's the delayed signal that the person's listening to. Maybe 5 or 10 or 20 seconds before that, there was the real signal that was being shoved into the buffer, such that the decoder then can choose bits that were lost during the fade and then blend it back to the analog sample that was pushed into the buffer, if you see what I'm saying. Blending is going to be very key during this transitional time of doing the dual analog with the side saddle digital signal.
So 5 to 7 or 10 years from now, everybody's got a digital radio, and I'm a right. medium wave DXer, and I'm listening at night. What am I going to hear?
Well, it's going to be all digital at that point. Once we phase out the analog component, then there's going to be a lot more power available in the digital bitstream to take and use time diversity, use all the error correction techniques, and there's going to be a lot of new ones by then that we don't even know about right now.
Ways to make the signal, if right. you will, more bulletproof.
Bulletproof to the SkyWave fade. I think you're going to see solutions for that 5, 10, 20 years out that will eliminate the problem of losing the signal, having to shut off, as people earlier were suggesting will happen. In the early going, yeah, there's going to be muting of the signal where no data will be valid to put into that speaker, and you're going to lose the reception. But then it will come back. If the digital has no valid bits to pump in there, then if the analog is there and it's useful, they will use it.
Well, that's an interesting set of opinions. We're throwing away the SkyWave, or we're worried about the SkyWave. We're narrowing the audio bandwidth in the interests of quality. I'm having trouble with that one. But no matter what, the bottom line is that once we're in the digital world, it'll never be the same. This is Mark Dernberger in Minneapolis. Till we meet again, good listening, DXers.
Thanks, Mark. Now let's take a quick look at the DX test coming up.
Let's begin this podcast by introducing the members of the Broadcast Test Committee, or BTC for short. The BTC coordinator is Jim Pogue. Jim lives in Memphis, Tennessee, and has been a DXer since 1964. Working with Jim is another veteran DXer, Brandon Jordan, who also lives in Memphis, Tennessee. Brandon operates the DXTests.info website, where you can find the very latest news of upcoming DX tests, as mentioned in this podcast. It's also the home of the BTC podcast. Professional broadcaster Paul Walker of Abbeville, South Carolina, is also an essential member of the committee. His extensive contacts throughout the broadcasting industry have enabled him to set up many DX tests in the past and promised to produce some of the most exciting upcoming tests this season. Also, Joe Miller, amateur radio operator KJ8O in Troy, Michigan. Joe pitches in by designing QSL verification cards for stations who test and request that service. Rounding out the committee is yours truly. My name is J.D. Stevens, and I'm your host for the BTC Podcast. I'm a DXer of over 30 years' experience, and I live in North Alabama, just outside the city of Huntsville. For several years, I served as the Courtesy Program Committee Coordinator for the International Radio Club of America. The Courtesy Program Committee was the precursor to today's Broadcast Test Committee. WLPO AM 1220 kHz in LaSalle, Illinois. Testing on Saturday morning, October 27, 2007. Time, 3 a.m. to 3:30 a.m. Central Time, which corresponds to 0800 to 0830 Coordinated Universal Time. Modes of operation, 1,000 watts using the station's normal daytime pattern. WLPO's programming for the test will consist of phonetic voice IDs, Morse code, sweet tones, and, quote, unique music. Special thanks to Chief Engineer Steve Vogler at WLPO for this test. And again, more details on this test, as well as QSL address and email, can be found at the dxtests.info website. That's dxtests.info. And that brings us to the end of this BTC podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
That's it for this edition of the DX Audio Service. We'll see you in 30 days with more Ho Ho DX. Remember, get out and support radio, and don't forget your cards.